together a little bit this evening the relationship between women and the mitzvah, as well as the miracle of Chanukah. We're all familiar with the fact that the Gemara says that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. In the first source, the Gemara in Shabbos and Rav Chav Gimel says that Nashim are chayavos in Ner Chanukah, because Afein Hayu Ve'Osa Hanes. They too, we'll see in a minute, so the exact translation is really a subject of dispute, but they too are involved in the miracle. Let's sort of leave the translation vague for a moment. The Gemara makes the same statement in two other places. The Gemara says the same thing with regard to the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, reading the Megillah in Purim, as well as the mitzvah of drinking the four kosos at the Seder. In each of these three places, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says that the women are obligated in each of these mitzvahs of Ner Chanukah, of Mikra Megillah, and of Dalet Kosos, because Afein Hayu Ve'Osa Hanes, they too were involved with the miracle. Why does the Gemara need this reason to account for the obligation of women? So the simplest understanding is that basically the rule of Zman Groma in theory would have applied to mitzvahs Rabbanan as well. Each of these three mitzvahs, the mitzvah of lighting the Ner Chanukah, the mitzvah of reading the Megillah, the mitzvah of drinking the four kosos at the Seder, of course are mitzvahs Rabbanan. But that notwithstanding, the rule the rule of thumb that women are exempt from mitzvah Shehazman Grama basically would have and should have applied to mitzvahs d'rabbanan as well, and that's what the Gemara is telling us. The Chiddush, the Gemara is telling us that the novelty is that rule is suspended because of this consideration of Afein Hayu Ve'Osa Hanes, because they too were involved in the miracle. Now, what does that phrase mean more precisely? Is a dispute in the Rishonim. Tosfos quotes different interpretations. Tosfos quotes in Psachim and in Megillah, Tosfos quotes the Rashban's chat, who says Afein Hayu Ve'Osa Hanes, that they were involved in bringing about the miracle, meaning that on Purim, Esther's role in bringing about the miracle and bringing about the Yeshua was so critical and so prominent. And similarly with regard to Chanukah, Yehudas inducing the Syrian Greek general, commander of forces, in feeding him milk, which is induced asleep, and then killing him. So she was instrumental in bringing about the salvation. And of course in Mitzrayim, so the Gemara in Sota says that Bishchus Noshim Tzidkonios, that we were redeemed from Mitzrayim in the merit of righteous women. So that's the Rashban says, Afein Hayu Ve'Osa Hanes, meaning they were the agents who brought about the Nes. Tosfos thinks that the words, although Tosfos obviously doesn't dispute this factually, Tosfos thinks the words implying more that they too were beneficiaries of the Nes, that they too were the dangers of Purim and Chanukah affected women and men equally, so women and men equally were beneficiaries of the miracle. Okay, so those are two understandings of what Hein Afein Hayu Ve'Osa Hanes means. They were involved in the Nes in the sense that they were the agents, they were the catalysts, they were the ones who were instrumental in bringing about the Nes, or Afein Hayu Ve'Osa Hanes, that they too were equally beneficiaries of each of these miracles. Be that as it may, factually, everyone agrees that Esther, Yehudas, and the Nashim Tzidkonios in Mitzrayim, that each of these played a very crucial role in bringing about the nation. In fact, that's what accounts for the minhag quoted here in source 4 in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says that the custom is that women abstain, women have an extra mitzvah on Chanukah, which men do not have, that they abstain from doing malacha during the time that the Ner of Chanukah are burning. And Mishnah Berurah says that means the first half hour that the Ner of Chanukah is burning. If the Ner of Chanukah burns longer than that, so So then the custom doesn't extend throughout. The Mishnah Berurah says the custom is only for that first half hour. And why is it that women have this additional mitzvah which men don't have? So the Mishnah Berurah refers to the Akein Hayav Osanes of the interpretation that they were the agents, the catalysts who brought about the miracle. So it's interesting to think. Obviously, there is nothing incidental or accidental about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha Pratis. And if in each of these cases the role of the Noshim was crucial in bringing about the Neis, so why was it? Why was it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ordained that it should be Esther more than anyone else who would bring about, who would be the instrument for the Neis of Purim? And why was such a crucial role assigned to Yehudas? So that's the question which I'd like to explore a little bit. We're not really going to talk so much about Yetzias Mitzrayim, but I hope that we will try to gain some insight into the significance of the fact that the Noshim, the role of the Noshim, was so crucial in both the Neis of Purim and Chanukah. Now, it's interesting that there is a little bit of a lack of symmetry in the three cases, right? In each of these cases, we say that the women were responsible for the Neis, right? On Purim, it was Esther's intercession with Ahasuerus. On Chanukah, it was Yehudas killing the Syrian Greek general. And on with Yetzias Mitzrayim and Pesach, it was Bishchus Nashim Tzikanios, as the Gemara in Sota recounts. So there's a difference between these two types of reasons, right? The first two show how the Noshim were active in some political or military sense, right? That Esther interceded in politically with Ahasuerus, and in that sense, she was crucial to the Neis coming about. And similarly, Yehudas intervened militarily, as it were, by killing the Syrian Greek general. By contrast, the role of the Noshim Tzikanios, it just means that the merit which they provided, but no military or political or any role is attributed to them. So it's not exactly comparable, right? The roles which women played in each of these cases are not exactly parallel. So what that suggests is the following. What that suggests is that just as in Mitzrayim, the ultimate role of the women was not, again, some kind of political move or military move, but was in the spiritual realm, that even on Chanukah and Purim, Esther's intercession with Ahasuerus, the reason she was given that role is because in the spiritual realm as well, it was the schus of Esther in particular and women in general, which was going to bring about the Yeshua. So that was sort of reflected in the political realm. But in each of these cases, the ultimate contribution and the ultimate role played by the Noshim, what's suggested by the case of Yetzias Mitzrayim, was spiritual rather than political or military. I'm not sure if I'm being clear on that point. Again, by Mitzrayim, there was no political hishtadlus, no political or military role, which, for that matter, which anyone played, other than possibly Moshe Rabbeinu, and even Moshe Rabbeinu, the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Ani Hashem, Ani Hu V'lo Acher, even Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't. So there, when we say that the women brought about the miracle, it meant through their spiritual accomplishments, through their spiritual activities. Presumably, the parallelism which should exist means that the fact that Esther was assigned the role of going to Ahasuerus and interceding was a reflection of the fact that in the spiritual realm, it was Esther and the Noshim who were to tip the balance, just as the fact that Yehudas was assigned the role of killing the Syrian general, again, is indicative of the fact that spiritually the contribution of the Nashim in the story of Hanukkah was formative and crucial. So let's try to understand what that is. So let's begin with Purim. The Rambam, if you take a look in source 5 comes from the Rambam at the beginning of Mishneh Torah lists the 613 mitzvahs. He lists the 613 mitzvahs, and then the Rambam tells you that in Mishneh Torah he'll discuss all 613 mitzvahs d'oraisa as well as the mitzvahs d'rabbanan. Then the Rambam tackles the question and says, well, one of the mitzvahs of Torah is that we're not allowed to add, right? The Torah says twice in Sefer Devarim that lo sof sefer lov lo sigra mimenu. We're not allowed to either add or subtract from the Torah's mitzvah. So then what's the justification for mitzvahs d'rabbanan? So the Rambam answers, the justification for mitzvahs d'rabbanan is twofold. First of all, when Chazal introduce a mitzvah d'rabbanan, they have to identify it as such. Chazal can't pass off a mitzvah d'rabbanan as a mitzvah d'oraisa. So for instance, the issue of eating milk and meat together, min ha-Torah, only applies to animal meat. It doesn't apply to chicken meat. Chicken meat is mid'rabbanan. So Chazal can't say just it's prohibited to eat the chicken meat with milk. They have to say, no, we're saying it mid'rabbanan because we're afraid people will confuse, and ultimately if they eat chicken meat with milk, they'll eat cow's meat with milk. So they have to be very upfront about identifying that the mitzvah is a d'rabbanan and they shouldn't package it as anything more than that. But then the Rambam says more than that. Then the Rambam also says, and he gives an example, of Kriyas HaMegillah. He says, Hanavim in Bezdin Tiknu Vitzivu Likos HaMegillah Ba'onasa, that the Nevi'im and Bezdin at the time introduced the mitzvah of reading the Megillah. Why? Kedei lahazkir shvachav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we should mention and be reminded of the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, utshuot she'osah lanu, and the salvations that he brought about for us, v'hoya korov l'shavoseinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was close and responsive to our crying out to him. And why do we want to mention this? Why do we want people to be aware of this? For two purposes. First of all, kedei levorcha ulahalalo, to praise and Hashem for it. And second of all, kedei lahodia ledoros habayim she'emes mashehev tichanu v'atari ki migagado asher lo Elohim kovim elov kashem elokeinu b'chol koreinu elov. The Rambam says something very fascinating. The Rambam says, Chazal has to explain how every mitzvah d'rabbanan links up with some mitzvah min ha-Torah. There's no such thing as a mitzvah mid'rabbanan which is an independent mitzvah mid'rabbanan. Because the Torah is perfect. The Torah is complete. There's nothing to add to the Torah. But Elamai, the Chachamim, can and should tell us how we can achieve and how we can internalize what the Torah wants us to know. So the Rambam says, you know what the Pshat in Kriyas HaMegillah is? Kriyas HaMegillah is supposed to reinforce for us something the Torah wants us to know. That's why Chazal introduced Kriyas HaMegillah. It's to reinforce the Korach of Tefillah, right? That we should know Kidei lahudia l'doros habor, that all generations should know she'emes mashev tichanu v'Torah, that what the Torah can promise us, that what nation is there like yours, Hashem is close to you b'chol koreinu elav. So the Rambam says that the Yontif of Purim and the story of Purim is basically one about the story of the Korach of Tefillah, the efficacy of Tefillah. And that's what the Yontif of Purim highlights, and the Yontif of Purim celebrates, again, is the Korach of Tefillah, mi kashem elokeinu b'chol koreinu elav. It's an interesting, I'm not sure if that's the way we always think of Purim, but that's the Rambam's conception and emphasis within Purim, is that it's a Yom Tov which, again, celebrates and underscores the Korach of Tefillah, the efficacy of Tefillah. Now, both Esther specifically, as well as Noshim generically, are identified with the Koach of Tefillah. If you take a look here, it's in source 6, the Gemara in Brachos tells us that the paradigm for many of the halachos of Tefillah that we have come from Chana, come from the description that we have of Chana davening when she's in Shiloh. The Gemara says that there are many, many just very central and basic halachos to be derived from the psukim of Chana. Chana hi medaberes al libo, hikam the mispal tashi achavin libo. The Chana again is the prototype, is the paradigm of someone davening with kavana. Rak svaseha naos, only her lips were moving. Mikan the mispal shiyachto pesvasav. Here we learn that it's not enough just when you're davening, just to sort of with your eyes scan the words in the sitter. But no, there has to be chitok svasayim. A person has to articulate with his lips. But on the other hand, v'kola lo yishameya. But her voice was inaudible. Mikan she also lahagbiya kola b'tfilasav. From here we learn that when a person davens, specifically Shemona Esrei, that one, it shouldn't be audible to anyone other than himself or herself. So many of the basic halachos of tefillah are derived from Chana. The Chana is the prototype, is the paradigm of tefillah. Within the story of the Megillah as well, again, it's Esther who organizes basically the mass gathering of tefillah, the kinas tefillah and tshuva, which brings about the Yeshua, when she tells Mordechai, lech knosus kol Yehudim hanimtzam b'Shushan, gather together all the Jews in Shushan, v'tzumo alai, and fast, v'al toku, v'al tishtu, shlosh of yamim, and clearly on a fast day you gather and you daven, so fast for 3 days and 3 nights. I and the maidens who attend me will do so as well. So Esther again organizes Chana, the Rav says, is the paradigm for the Tefillas HaYachid, and Esther organizes and arranges for the Tefillas HaRabim. So since Purim basically is a story of Tefillah, the story of the Koach of Tefillah, and again, ultimately on the spiritual level, so the fact that we were saved on Purim isn't again because of the political maneuvering with Esther and Achashverosh and Haman. On the ultimate level, it's because of the Koach of Tefillah. So in the Koach of Tefillah, because Noshim excel in the Koach of Tefillah, so that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, so even on the natural level, the agent and the catalyst for the miracle should be Esther HaMalka. Meaning that everything, we believe that in Hashgacha Pratis, everything really unfolds on two different levels, right? There's an ultimate spiritual level on which things unfold, and then there's also a more natural level on which things unfold. The natural level on which things unfold is that you have this Russia in Iran who's threatening Eretz Yisrael. That's on the natural level. So he's a Russia and he's a Meshugana and he's threatening Eretz Yisrael and he's trying to get nuclear arms. That's on the natural level. And on the natural level, so the response is political, the response is military. We believe that what determines how things will unfold on the natural level is what's happening on a higher spiritual level in terms of our tefillah and in terms of our tshuva. So basically what we're suggesting is the fact that Esther was given a prominent role on the natural level was meant to reflect what was happening on the spiritual level. On the spiritual level, so Purim is the story of the Koach of Tefillah, the efficacy of Tefillah. And that is something, again, obviously not exclusively in the domain of women. Obviously, men are certainly obligated in tefillah and are supposed to do their best to excel in tefillah as well. But nevertheless, the paradigms for tefillah are women. If you take a look on, there was one sheet that went around. It says on the top the days of deliverance. It's from the volume most recently published from the Rav Zichrono Livracha, essays on Hanukkah and Purim. So I'll just read you two lines from the from the previous page, which is not Zerach, and then this section is entitled "Prayer and the Superiority of Women." And the Rav begins as follows. This is right before the page that you have in front of you will begin. Esther made another contribution. She taught Mordechai and the Jews how to pray and how to fast in times of distress and crisis. And now the Rav quotes the Psukim from the Megillah. Go gather together all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast you for me and neither eat nor drink. Now it picks up in the page you have in front of you. 3 days, night and day. I also and my maidens will fast in like manner. And then the Rav continues that the inspired charismatic woman is superior to inspired charismatic man. For our purposes, we can leave out the charismatic and not try to figure out what it means in this context. Let's make life simpler for us. The inspired charismatic woman is superior to inspired charismatic man in two areas. The area of applied practical thinking, he's referring to the Gemara in Nida, that Bina Yesera Nitna Leisha, that a woman is endowed with an extra measure of Bina, and the area of prayer. The woman knows something that man does not know. Was not Chana the great charismatic teacher who taught the entire congregation of Israel how to pray and how to confront Hashem with petition? Our sages said many important rules can be derived from the verses relating to Chana's prayer. Yes, Chana would not have been counted among the 10 persons comprising a quorum. Nevertheless, she is our teacher regarding prayer. If not for her, we would not know how to pray. While Chana taught the individual, the lonely man or woman, how to pour out his or her soul in times of distress and vexation, Esther taught Mordechai, the Jews, and all future generations how to pray in assembly, in community, when disaster strikes the nation. Okay. So that's the first shot was suggesting for the Afen Hoyu the Oso Anes by Purim, that again, the reason on the natural level Esther was so prominent is because on the ultimate spiritual level, Yom Purim is the story of Tefillah, that's what the Rambam says, and in terms of Tefillah, again, both Esther as an individual, as well as representing Nishei Yisrael in general, that women have, again, in the Rav's words, are superior to men in the realm of tefillah. As a matter of fact, Pinkus has, Zichrono Livracha, has a remarkable pshat. There is a Gemara in Kiddushin, where the Gemara says that Asarek havim sicha yadu l'olam, tisha natlum nashim ve'echad kal olam kula. That 10 measures of conversation came into the world, 9 measures were taken by women, and 1 for the rest of the world. So generally, it's understood to mean just conversing, right? Sicha is to converse, and generally it's understood that that women are more talkative than men. That's the way the Gemara is generally understood. But Pekka says he doesn't think that's what the Gemara means. He says that we know the Gemara in Bracha says that how do we know that Yitzhak Avinu was the one who introduced davening mincha? Because the pasuk says, "Vayetze Yitzhak lasuach basada lifnos arev." Lasuach basada. Yitzhak went out to engage in sicha, and the Gemara says, "Ein sicha ela tefila." That sicha refers to tefila. Tefila laani kiyata v'lifnei Hashem yishpach sicha. That the ani, the fourth person, pours out what's inside his heart before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That sicha refers to tefillah. So they think that that's what that Gemara in Kiddushin means as well. Asarek havim sicha yodel olam, again, it refers to tefillah. It refers to the capacity to daven, and this is something for which women innately and traditionally apparently have a greater capacity for tefillah than men. So what we're adding is that given that according to the Rambam, Purim is the story of tefillah, and that it's the story of the koach of tefillah, the efficacy of tefillah, that's why the Hashgacha wanted to sort of highlight that fact by Atein Hoyolosanes, that Esther should be the primary catalyst and the agent for the nation of Purim. And an ultimate understanding with regard to Purim, and then we will come to Hanukkah. An ultimate understanding with regard to Purim is that there is a famous Gemara in Shabbos. It's source number 7 here on the first page of the sources. There is a famous Gemara in Shabbos which says that on Purim there was a second Kabbalah Satorah. That the original Kabbalah Satorah, which Klal Yisrael made at Har Sinai, was reiterated on the occasion of Purim. And the Gemara associates this with the pasuk in the Megillah of Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim aleihem v'alzara. And the Gemara interprets the pasuk that Kimu v'kiblu, that Kimu mashe kiblu kvar, that they validated, that they reiterated that which they had already accepted. We had already accepted the Torah at Mamad HaSinai, and there was a second Kabbalah HaTorah on the occasion of Purim. So Purim is also, according to this Gemara in Shabbos, there's a different emphasis in the Yontif of Purim. Obviously not mutually exclusive, but complementary, that Purim is also a Yontif of Kabbalah HaTorah. So the Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Yisro comments on the pasuk when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Kosoma the Beis Yaakov, the Sageb of Bnei Yisrael. So all familiar, Rashi quotes from the Medrash that Beis Yaakov refers to the women and Bnei Yisrael refers to the men. Right? That's why the school system was named Beis Yaakov based on this interpretation of Chazal. That first, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, first he should talk to the women to see if they'll agree to be Makabal the Torah, and only then should he talk to the men. And the Medrash comments, because unless the women will influence their husbands and children with regard to Kabbalah HaTorah as well. So unless you secure the commitment and the acceptance of Beis Yaakov, don't move on to Bnei Yisrael. So even in terms of Kabbalah HaTorah, the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, first and foremost, the women have to commit. So again, from that vantage point as well, Purim as a Yom Tov of Kabbalah HaTorah, so again, the role of the Nashim is absolutely crucial and paramount. Hence, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, let that be reflected on the natural level by Afhein Hoyeb Ofanes of Esther being the agent for the miracle of Purim. Okay. Enough about Purim for now. What about Hanukkah? How does this scheme work for Hanukkah as well? So let's try to understand what exactly was the struggle of the Hashanah against the Syrian Greeks. Again, we know that there was a revolt, and that they succeeded in their revolt, but what precipitated the revolt? So there was religious persecution. What specifically were the Syrian Greeks trying to accomplish through the religious persecution? So in Alanisim, Bimei Matisyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Chashmonoi Yuvonov, She'omdu Malchus Yavon Harashal Amcha Yisrael, right? When the wicked Syrian Greek government oppressed Amcha Yisrael, your nation, Bnei Yisrael, Lahashkicham Torasacha, to try to induce them to forget your Torah, Ulahaaviram Mechuke Ritonacha. That's the phrase which is crucial for us. Ulahaaviram Mechuke Ritonacha, and to cause them to transgress and to reject the chukim of your will, Hashem. Lahavira mechukei ritzanecha. So the Eglei Tal, the Sochet Shavu Rebbe, best known for his classic sefer on the Melachos Shabbos called Eglei Tal, also for his response to Adnei Nezer. So there are some shorter ksavim in Machshav and Chassidus from him, which are collected in two volumes called Na'ot HaDesha. So if you take a look, it's the There is a sheet, I think it says in the Os HaDesha on top. So he calls attention to this fact that, again, that in the Ala Nisim we say that the Syrian Greeks were targeting not so much all of Torah, but they singled out Chukim. Again, what does Chukim mean? So the Gemara Yuma, sorry about this, I should have mentioned this first. On the first page, you have in source number 8, in the bottom left hand, so the Gemara, of course, introduces the distinction between Mishpatim and Chukim. Mishpatim are something for which we morally intuit, right? We, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gave us an intuition that theft is wrong, that murder is wrong. And chukim are those mitzvahs for which HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't give us any moral intuition. We don't have any moral intuition about achilas chazir, about eating ham, about levisha shatnez, about wearing shatnez. We certainly don't have any moral intuition for the mitzvah of chalitza or the process for taharas mitzvah, a person who's afflicted with tzaras, how he purifies himself. We obviously have no moral intuition for these things. What's more, they don't seem to make any sense to us. So the Gemara says that those mitzvahs, those halachos for which we have no moral intuition, are what the Torah refers to as chukim. So the Avnei Nezer calls attention to the fact that in Al HaNisim what we say is that the Syrian Greeks, they didn't just target all of Torah, but in particular they were targeting chukei ritzonecha. They were targeting the chukim. Why were they targeting the chukim if it was just an anti-religion, anti-Judaism? So they should have indiscriminately opposed anything and everything in the Torah. Why did they single out the chukim? So the Avnei Nezer says as follows. If you take a look on the second sheet with the different excerpts pasted on. So the top source there is a little excerpt from a comment that Ramban has in Parshas Achrenos. Ramban here alludes to, he says, Lo'ucha lefarish, he says, I can't say any more than I've said already. Ki hayinu tzrichim, we'd have to get involved in a whole, we'd have to go far afield. Lachsom, literally to close or to shut, ki hamischaknim b'teva, those who consider themselves wise, hanimshachim acharei hayavani, who are followers of the Greek, meaning Aristotle, asher, now look at the Ramban's characterization of Aristotle and by extension all of Greek culture. Asher hikrish, Aristotle denied kol dava, anything, zulasi hamurgashlo. Anything that he couldn't experience, anything that he couldn't figure out on his own, he denied. The he gives daito lachshod, and he had the presumptuousness, right? Hagosa literally means to stir, when you stir a pot, so that's called the little hagosa. So it literally means he stirred himself up in the sense of being haughty. Lachshod, who the Talmid of Harishon, he and his wicked disciples, kichol inyan, any matter, shalohisig elav hu bisvaraso enenu emes, that anything that he independently, autonomously, couldn't figure out with his own seichel couldn't be true. So what the Ramban suggests is that Greek culture was basically egocentric, which incidentally sort of gives us a handle on what otherwise is very paradoxical about Greek culture. Greek culture is known for seemingly two opposite things. First of all, the Western tradition of rationalism goes back to Greek culture. That's where the beginnings of Western philosophy are in Greek culture. But then Greek culture is also known to have been a very hedonistic culture. We know from Greek plays and from how they worship the human body, The Greek culture was also very hedonistic, so it's sort of a strange combination. According to the Ramban, the common denominator of the two was that they worshipped man. So they worshipped man's body and they worshipped man's mind. But it was an egocentric culture. And basically what the Ramban says is that they couldn't believe or acknowledge anything beyond their own finite capacity. So what do we think about that question? So what we think about that question, what the Torah tells us to think is this. Certainly we believe that our emunah is very rational. It's eminently rational. If someone asks us why we believe in Torah Min HaShemayim and why we believe that Am Yisrael, the Am HaNivcha, so we can answer rationally. We don't just say, I believe. We can answer rationally. We can answer about our Masorah, and we can answer about the miraculous course of Jewish history and how the Roman Empire and so many other empires have disappeared, and this one despised people whom everyone has been trying to destroy, just defying all and any natural explanations, continues to exist. So we have very real and rational reasons and basis for what we believe. But once we believe, so then we accept even those parts of Torah that we don't necessarily understand. So what we say is, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't ask us to believe without giving us a rational basis for our emunah. But once we have that rational basis for emunah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, listen, you got to trust me. Moshe l'mada l'adonah. Let's say you have a relationship with someone, a spouse, a parent, a teacher. A relationship with someone, a long-standing relationship, a relationship for 10 years, 20 years, even longer. And consistently over the course of these 10, 20 years, this person, again, spouse, parent, teacher, sibling, whoever, has always been very, very wise and judicious and kind and considerate and compassionate. Now they'll do something or they'll recommend a course of action which doesn't make sense to you. So in the context of your relationship, so you'll say, you know what, for the 20 years I've known this person, he or she has consistently been wiser than me, more judicious. So obviously they see something, he or she sees something that I don't see. So you know what, I'm going to defer to his or her better judgment. So that's not irrational, right? It's faith, it's belief. It's deferring to something and accepting something we don't necessarily understand. But it's not irrational, right? There's a rational basis and foundation. But once you have that foundation, that rational basis and foundation for belief, so then the Torah says we're supposed to believe. As a matter of fact, Reb Chaim is quoted as saying that what people say that Nimos HaMashiach will understand everything is not true. He says, Emunah is a mitzvah of the Torah. The mitzvahs of the Torah are always going to be operative. Even in Nimos HaMashiach, there are going to be things about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of governing the rule and running the world that we don't understand. Because part of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to recognize and acknowledge that obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is infinite and his Chokhmah is infinite, so it's ludicrous to assume that at any point we should be able to understand everything he does. HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets us understand enough of what he does. HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets us see enough of his kaviyochol fingerprints in history and lets us understand enough of the Torah that we're rationally convinced of the truth of our belief, of the truth of Torah. But once we're given that basis, so then we're called upon to believe even that which we don't necessarily understand. That's what the Avnei Nezer says. That's the significance of the fact that at Har Sinai, when we accepted the Torah, we said Nasha v'Nishma. Nishma in the sense not only of hearing in an auditory sense, but Nishma in the sense of understanding. That's first we'll do. We're going to do it unconditionally. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we've seen you. We've experienced you. We know that Hashem Hu Elokim. We know that. So because of that Nasha, once we know, so then we believe even that which we don't understand. Once we know and understand, So then we believe even that which we don't yet or perhaps never will fully understand. And that's what Nasa the Nishma represents. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, Kuf Yates, that David HaMelech says, Tuv Tam Vadas Lamdeini. This is one of the psukim that we say before Tzkiyah Shofar. Right before Tzkiyah Shofar, there are six tzukim in HaMetzah, and then there's a series of about six tzukim that we say right before Tzkiyah Shofar. So one of them is that the Rosh HaTevis is Kras Satan, right? Kuf Resh Ayin Sin Tes Nun, right? Kol Yishamata. And the pasuk for Tes in the Kras Satan is Tuv Tam Vadas Lamdeini Kiva Mitzvah Sefer Hamanti. So teach me, Tuv Tam Vadas. Let me have the best of knowledge, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Kiva Mitzvah Sefer Hamanti. Because I believed in your mitzvah. So my father, Zichron Levracha, was fond of quoting the Me'iri on this pasuk. The Me'iri has a commentary on Tehillim. So the Me'iri, one of the later Rishonim. So the Me'iri says on this pasuk, the David HaMelech says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know what? The mitzvah sefer hemantu, Ribono Shel Olam. I have believed in your mitzvahs unconditionally, even without understanding them. Because of that, in that zchus, so let me now understand them. Let me understand even more. Tuv tam vadas lamdeini. Why? Because unconditionally, once we have that basis and that foundation for belief, so then unconditionally kiva mitzvah sefer hamanti. Similarly, once we've seen you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, once we see what you did in Mitzrayim, once we know what Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov told us, so we know who you are, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so nasa, and then we hope, nishma also, that we'll be able to understand as much as possible. So basically, that was the clash between the Torah and Lahavdil, the Greek culture. Greek culture, as the Ramban said, wasn't willing to defer to anyone or anything. So what Aristotle could understand or figure out could be true, but Aristotle couldn't understand on his own, or couldn't figure out on his own what wasn't true. And that, the reason the Ramban is so harsh, because the Ramban says it's the ultimate gaiva, it's the ultimate rebelliousness against HaKadosh Baruch Hu to say that the muscle would be like this. Let's say you have a two-year-old at home, or even a younger baby, a one-year-old, a six-month-old. So the question is, how should you parent this little baby? So there are two possibilities. One possibility is you only do for the child what the child can understand and appreciate. So if you ask the child whether the child wants to go to this scary-looking guy in the long white coat who walks around with these needles and gets his kicks out of sticking little kids, so the child doesn't really appreciate what the point is of getting stuck with the needles every few months in the doctor's office. Or no, maybe the parent has to parent according to his level or her level of understanding and intelligence, right? So we obviously understand that not only can the parent parent that way, but the parent is going to be guilty of gross neglect if we'll only do for our children when they're little what they can appreciate and what they can understand. So it would be gross neglect. So to imagine that everything in the world that happens, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is held hostage to our very finite understanding, so that's an unbelievable chutzpah. And that's why the Ramban is so harsh. He refers to the Yevoni, who the Talmid of HaRishon. So that basically is the clash which was happening between the Torah and Greek culture. Again, the Greek culture was egocentric in demanding that we have to understand everything, and that's why they targeted, coming back to the Avnei Nezer's point, that's why they targeted Chukei Ritzonecha. More than the other part of Torah, they targeted Dafka the Chukim, those parts of Torah where we don't understand. No, we have no intuition. Why is it worse to wear wool and linen than any other two types of material or fiber together? We have no intuition for that. But Elamai, we have a rational basis for Torah, we have a rational basis for our belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so we bow our heads and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows better than us. So the Greeks are not willing to do that. So that's why the Greeks targeted, in particular, HaVira Mechukei Ritzonecha, because, again, of the egocentricity of Greek culture. So take a look. That's what this is the basic idea that the that the Avnei Nezer develops with regard to Hanukkah. Now, the willingness which the Chashmonoim demonstrated to be Moser Nefesh, A, to be Moser Nefesh for Torah, and B, to be Moser Nefesh in rebelling against the Syrian Greeks, is also something which can't really be rationally explained, right? If you would think about it from a rational perspective, did it make any sense whatsoever for the Chashmonaim to rebel a handful of Kohanim, of Talmidei Chachamim, who don't know anything about warfare, a handful of them to rebel against the world superpower was absolutely crazy. It's also not something which, again, on the rational perspective, could ever be understood. But there was a capacity for Mesiras Nefesh, a capacity, again, for an emuna when our reason doesn't take us that far, but just for emuna. Now, if you take a look on the second page here, in source 10, so the Meshech Chochma comments how Mesiras Nefesh, again, is not rooted in reason and understanding, but on the contrary, it's just rooted in an instinctive and almost visceral sense of emunah. He's commenting on the pasuk where the pasuk says, "Ve'u kara Hashem b'shem b'tzalo ben Uri ben Chor l'mata Yehuda." Right? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu appoints Bezalel as the chief artisan for the Melachas HaMishkan. So it's not so common that someone should be identified not only by their father's name, but by the grandfather's name as well. Usually the Torah only goes back one generation. So-and-so, the son of his father, and the grandson of his grandfather. That's unusual. So why is it here that the Torah wants to make sure that we associate Bezalel not only with his father Uri, but with his grandfather Chor also? So who is Chor? Who is Chor? Chor was the son of Kalev and Miriam, right? Who died al Kiddush Hashem when he resisted, when Bnei Yisrael wanted to build the Egel, and Chor told them, and Chor resisted, and Chor opposed. So he knew that he was putting his life on the line, but he did it. He was Moshe Nefesh. So says the Bnei Simcha, a beautiful idea. He says, in order to be Moshe Nefesh, a person can't stop and analyze and rationalize. You analyze and rationalize, you're not going to be Moshe Nefesh. He says, Chor was Moshe Nefesh. He says, how does a person merit Chochma? Again, it's that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards a Mida Keneged Mida, because you didn't rely on your own Chochma, but you just acted out of Emuna in me, with Mesiras Nefesh for me, so I reward you by giving you Chochma Elokis, right? Since you were willing to forego the Chochma Enoshis, the human Chochma, and just act out of Emuna in me without the Hischakmos Yesera, so because of that, I reward you with Chochma Elokis. So basically, Chanukah, again, what was required in Chanukah is that we had to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and again, not so much of our, not the shown of our rational commitment to Torah, but about the Emunah and the Mesiras Nefesh, which are required when the Torah's demands of us, or when historical oppression demands of us Emunah and Mesiras Nefesh, which go beyond our understanding. That's what Chanukah required from us. Now, the Gemara in Gittin tells us that in this area as well of Mesiras Nefesh, traditionally, Noshim have sort of set the standard. And the Gemara tells two stories. First of all, the Gemara tells us, I think it's after Bayis Sheni, if you take a look, it's the last source here on the second page, Maisa Bedalid Meas Yeladim Vialados, 400 boys and girls were being set sent into captivity, and they realized that they were going to be used for prostitution. Both the boys and the girls were going to be used for prostitution. So they asked, if we jump into the ocean and commit suicide, is it permissible under these circumstances? Will we come to Olam Haba? Will it be considered a Kiddush Hashem or no? It's included in the prohibition against suicide. So the Gemara says that the oldest one amongst them knew that the halacha in this case was that you're allowed to, and that it would be an act of Kiddush Hashem to commit the suicide rather than allow the Chilul Hashem of letting the Jewish boys and girls be used for prostitution. So the Gemara tells the story that the ones who jumped first were the girls. In the third line, Kevan Sheshamdu Sheshamu Yaldos Kach Kotsu Kulan V'Naflu Sel Chayom. At first it was the young women who jumped, and then after that the boys reasoned, well, if the women did it, then we're obligated to do it also. We're obligated to do it also. And then after this, the Gemara proceeds to tell the famous story of Chana and her seven sons, right? The Gemara tells, beginning on line 5, Ki olecha haragnu kol hayom nechshavnu katzon tivcha. We've been killed for you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all day long. But Rav Yehuda says, this refers to this pasuk, refers to the story of the Isha v'Shiva v'Neha, and how each of the seven sons was brought before the Caesar, and he instructed them to plot the Avodas Kochavim, to worship the Avodah Zarah, and each one in succession said to him, no, Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yi Elokha Elohim Acherim Alpana, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokein Hashem Echad, that all seven of them died. Why does the Gemara describe the story as Isha v'Shiva v'Neha? They didn't have a father? It's unlikely that it means that she, I don't know, that the first husband had died and then that they had two different fathers. There's no reason to assume that. The clear implication in the Gemara is that what the seven sons did was due to her influence. And that seems to be the continuity in the Gemara. That the same way in the previous story, after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, when these 400 children were being taken into captivity, that it was the women, it was the young women who were the first ones to be Mosa Nefesh, to die al Kiddush Hashem. So the Gemara seems to be implying that it was the mother's influence over her sons, which is why they met the challenge of dying al Kiddush Hashem. So Chanukah basically, again, was a yontiv of Mesiras Nefesh. Was a yontiv, again, the struggle on the spiritual level was whether or not the Greek oppression and the Greek, again, egocentrism of not believing, not deferring to anything that we can't fully understand. So basically, to defer, you have to be Mosa Nefesh. It's not easy to do something, to accept something we don't understand. There's a Mesiras Nefesh, Al Achos Kama V'Kama. When you have a Greek, a Syrian Greek government that's oppressing and that's threatening to kill us when we abide by that which perhaps we don't fully understand. It was a Yom Tov of Mesiras Nefesh. Again, in Mesiras Nefesh, so again, as the Gemara in Gittin indicates, So the women traditionally have set the standard, have paved the way, and that's why, again, the Afen Hoyev Osaneis, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu ordained that even on the natural level, it should be Yehudis who was very prominent in bringing about the Nes of Purim. And just finally, in conclusion, it's interesting to notice that the last source you have here, there is a halacha as follows. Generally, with regard to a mitzvah essay, with regard to a positive commandment, if the expense one would have to incur to fulfill the mitzvah is going to be very taxing, it's going to be more than a fifth of one's income. So let's say a person earns $100 a week, and the price for wine or grape juice, to have wine or grape juice for Kiddush and Shabbos, is going to be more than $20, so he's not obligated to exceed a fifth of his income in order to facilitate fulfillment of a mitzvah asay. That's the rule of thumb. Or if a person's income, again, would be very meager, achmanu l'tzlan, and because of that he couldn't afford to buy a lulav esav, So then he not only isn't he required to, but he's really not supposed to, because he's not supposed to induce poverty in order to fulfill a mitzvah's essay. And the rule is, hamavazbez al yivazbez yosem mechomes, that a person is not supposed to spend more than a fifth of one's income to facilitate a mitzvah's essay. To avoid violating a low sase, you have to give all the money in the world. If the boss says, either come in on Shabbos or you're fired, so then one is not allowed to come in on Shabbos. But to facilitate the fulfillment of a positive mitzvah, there is a cap of chomesh. So the Rambam paskins in one of the last halachos in Hilchos Chanukah, that this rule doesn't apply to Nech Chanukah. That even if you have a poor person who doesn't have a penny to his name, literally, Rachman al-Islam, he would be required to literally sell the shirt off his back, or to go begging for tzedakah in order to have enough oil to light the Nech Chanukah. Why? Because according to what we've been discussing, the whole Yom Tov of Chanukah is a Yom Tov of Mesiras Nefesh. So Mimela, how appropriate it is, the Chazal say that the fulfillment of mitzvahs Nech Chanukah also requires Mesiras Nefesh, because that's what the whole lesson of Chanukah is. Again, it was the battle between the Chashmonoim and the Syrian Greeks was one of, again, egocentrism versus Mesiras Nefesh, for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us. The Gemara in Shabbos says that the Chachamim didn't introduce the Yom Tov of Chanukah right away. That when the Chashmonaim prevailed against the Syrian Greeks, and then they regained control of all of Eretz Yisrael, including the Beis HaMikdash, and they rededicated the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't right away ordain the Yom Tov of Chanukah. It says Lashana Acheres. When the next year rolled around, then they ordained the Yom Tov of Chanukah. Why this hiatus? So it's a beautiful, beautiful explanation from the Chiddush HaRim. Chiddush HaRim says, whenever we have a Yom Tov, he says, be it a Yom Tov D'Oraisa, be it a Yom Tov D'Rabbanan, there's no such thing as a commemorative Yom Tov. There's no such thing as Pesach being purely commemorative. On Pesach, the same intrinsic qualities which were present in the day of the 15th of Nisan, the same capacity for Gilui Shechina, for revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same quality and capacity for redemption is an inherent quality in the day, and it's present every year. So he says, what the Chashmonaim, the Chiddush HaRim says, the Chiddush HaRim says so beautifully, he says, the Chashmonaim didn't know. What happened on Chanukah, was that an indication that there was some special quality in these days that should now be observed every year? Or no, maybe there's no special quality in a day. If that's so, there isn't going to be a Yom Tov just for purposes of commemoration. There are no commemorative Yom Tovim in Yadus. Lashana Acheres, when Chotei Kislev rolled around the next year, and they saw, oh, you can feel it, that they were attuned to this. You can feel in the time that there is, again, the capacity, again, for Mesiras Nefesh, for cultivating our capacity for Mesiras Nefesh, and for everything that ensues from that, they felt that that was present in the time, so they realized that Yom Tov, that Chanukah was supposed to be ordained as a Yom Tov L'Doros for all generations. So when Chanukah comes, again, Chanukah was the story again of Mesiras Nefesh, and it was the Mesiras Nefesh against the attempts of Lahavir Mechukei Ritzonech, which prevailed, and that's why it was Afin Hoyba Osa Anes, with Noshim taking a leading role. So every year in Chanukah, that the week of Chanukah is a time which is especially conducive, especially in the Sugo, to developing and cultivating that capacity that we have, again, of accepting Chukei Ritzonecha, of cultivating our capacity for Mesiras Nefesh, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for His Torah. Thank you.
Can I just read this?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.